Welcome to Conversations for a Brave New World with Donna, Sonia and Cliff, where we bring you a global, national and local focus on gender, sexuality and feminism.
Welcome to this month's episode of Conversations for a Brave New World.
I'm Associate Professor Clifford Lewis, and on this month's episode, we'll be talking about women in STEM.
I'm joined by two fabulous speakers, Dr. Felicity McClure from Charles Darwin University and Associate Professor Teresa Larkin from the University of Wollongong. While girls make up a significant proportion of students enrolled in STEM at high school and school, the number of girls that proceed into STEM education at a university level and in STEM careers significantly declines. A report from the Department of Industry, Sciences and Resources suggests that women only make up about 37% of those enrolled in STEM education at a university level. And that number drops to about 15% when you consider women who enter STEM qualified jobs. So what's going on in the STEM pipeline? What's challenging or limiting girls and women from continuing their interest in STEM?
So I'm now joined by Dr. Felicity McClure, who is a lecturer at Charles Darwin University in science education, and a person who's passionate about research in STEM and what's the nuances of who participates in STEM education and who doesn't. Thank you for joining us, Felicity. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. So, I grew up out in the country in northern New South Wales, and I remember doing science at school and being told by my physics teacher that girls don't do well in physics. That was one of the first things that they said, and I was so horrified that I was determined to do well. But you know, here we are, quite a number of years on. And I've taught in senior schools in a number of states and science. And unfortunately, we're still seeing some of the same patterns that we saw that many years ago. We're still seeing very few girls doing physics, for example. More do biology and some do chemistry. But that STEM pipeline, we just don't see the diversity that we'd like to see and that would benefit the community in going through and continuing on to university level.
So Felicity, definitely agree. Like, it's 2024, we're having the same conversation. And I fear that in 10 more years, someone will be having the same conversation again. Why hasn't things changed? What is your research saying to you that's preventing such a basic concept about getting everyone included in STEM?
I know it is quite shocking. So a lot of the rationale behind introducing integrated STEM projects in schools. So when we're talking about integrated STEM projects, we're talking about including aspects of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics into a project, a real world project. Then the idea is to help students to understand what STEM careers entail. So for a lot of students, they don't really know what it means to be an engineer or a scientist or what STEM careers really are. So these integrated STEM projects were kind of introduced to engage students more. However, what we're seeing, my research is showing, is that a lot of those STEM projects that are being used often perpetuate some of those stereotypes that students have about STEM careers. So if you ask girls about what they see as STEM careers, they'll kind of think that, for example, careers in technology, you've got to be geeky, you've got to be a bit of a nerd, you know, and they don't see themselves as a nerd. Girls often don't count themselves as being, you know, very clever at science and maths, even though the evidence shows that there's absolutely no difference between boys and girls in these areas. So they don't see themselves, see themselves as having a STEM identity. Another one is this idea that, you know, it doesn't, STEM careers in their mind don't help them meet their goals in life. They see STEM careers as not being related to people. You know, you're just going to be sitting there in a lab with a white coat and not talking to people. So, you know, they see that as, you know, not really on my, something that I really want to do. So what we want to do is to try to get these integrated STEM programs that are more overcome some of those stereotypes and actually are more focused on things that more diverse students might be interested in, rather than just having a STEM project about always about cars or other things which are sort of more stereotypically male. We want to think of other kinds of projects that will really engage more diverse groups.
Definitely. And it's interesting, isn't it, that there is this idea that certain types of STEM are male and certain types of STEM are female.
Yes.
And I would hazard a guess it's more the caring types of science that are female and the more technology side of science that are male.
Yes,
Where
that
does
is
this
what happens. Yes.
So where does the stereotype still come from?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we're sort of still, I think, trying to work out where some of those stereotypes are coming from, and do students still hold them? Seems to be very persistent, this belief amongst girls, that they're not as able and in science and maths as boys are. And what we found in some of the projects that we looked at and some of the questionnaires that we ran with them about the emotional climate in the STEM classroom was that girls often don't feel that they're supported or given enough information. Because they doubt themselves, what they'll do is often, you see this happen often, they'll stand back and let the boys take over and do these projects. They don't, there's that self-confidence issue there. That seems to be one of the things that is being a barrier.
A vicious cycle, isn't it? Like not being able to take that lead and feel confident. How sad is that to not feel like you are smart in a certain way? You're talking about the community benefit as well of having women in STEM.
Yes.
What are your thoughts around that? What community benefits are there?
Well, a STEM covers is such a broad field, isn't it? But so many of the STEM projects, STEM things that people do are very creative and require people to sort of come up with solutions to problems. And if we only have, one sector of the community who's seeing those problems and working, thinking what are the problems, then there'll be a lot of problems that don't get addressed that, because, a different sector of the community with different ways of seeing things aren't sort of, engaged in that problem solving. So I think there's a wonderful diversity of problem finding and problem solving that can be brought in by having a diverse group of people working in these fields.
Absolutely. And I think that's with generating ideas. I think having that diversity there in that room is so important in getting those diverse perspectives together and supporting how we look at a problem in the future. So let's take a step, 10 years from now, I suppose. What would you like to see happen in the world over this time to make it just normal that we're not having this conversation again?
Well, I mean, I think I don't know that we've come up with a solution yet to for this. I mean, there's a lot of work been going on in this area, looking at how can we make these careers more attractive to a more diverse group of students. I think one of the ways is by making giving students an opportunity to engage with more diverse projects at school, so that they can see that, STEM careers can be people oriented. They can be engage authentic and solve problems that they really care about themselves. So that's one way that we're trying to work towards engaging more girls, more students with diverse students. So, role models are really important, I think, and there's quite a bit of work being done on that, sort of getting female role models or role models from different backgrounds, showing that people who engage in these careers can come from any background, and have a lot to
Exactly.
contribute.
And I think there's also responsibility on society largely. Like, we started off, you were telling us about your teacher. And I would hazard a guess that that's not an uncommon experience even today. We as society construct these narratives of toys kids are allowed to play with, very basically. We construct these narratives about, what girls should and shouldn't do. But we don't construct them to empower. We construct these narratives to restrict people. Like, women should dress a certain way. Women should be in this certain field. Those narratives just end up being so coercive. So I think there is a call out even generally to, as a society, to be more aware of what we are saying through the words we use, through the actions we demonstrate, and the example we set through that. Question to you is, researchers and young girls listening to the show, what advice would you have for them about getting into STEM?
I would say that open your horizons. Think about, there's way more opportunities out there than you can ever imagine. You need to believe in yourself that girls can do really well in science and maths, and that they, I think it's important for girls to know that they do tend to underestimate their abilities in these areas, and to.
Absolutely. And I think the message there is back yourself. Don't listen to what the world tells you you can and cannot do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Felicity. Much appreciated this conversation. And you've given us a lot to think about. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm now joined by Associate Professor Teresa Larkin, who is a researcher in biomedical sciences. Teresa, as a woman in STEM, can you tell us what got you along in that journey and what got you interested in STEM?
Interesting because I do remember doing science in year six and I did not like it at all. I thought it was boring. We had some experiments about a brick floating in water and things like that with, a different teacher. So it's not longer I was really like, oh, I love science. And I think that's changing though. I do think that science is presented differently for kids in primary school now. In high school, I did like that we got exposed to lots of different things. I remember learning about clouds and, about obviously biology stuff, and then I quite liked chemistry. And so then by the time I'd finished year 10, I know that I did like it. I wanted to do 4-unit science, but our school didn't have that. So I did chemistry and physics. And yeah, I don't know. I think I just like the problem-solving aspect, finding patterns in certain things. And so then I did do science at uni, but when I started, I did an advanced science course, but I did nothing advanced about it. And but some people got to skip and things like that. But in my first year of uni, I did maths, physics, chemistry, and biology. That is broad. No one else really does that. You might start to do your biologies or you might start to do your physics and maths. But I think then, so I guess what I'm saying is I didn't really have a specific plan. I just thought, oh, I think, I like science. I'm going to go into this. But what set me on my path, I think, more was that I realized that there was medicinal chemistry course, and I quite liked the idea that it was a bit medical related and, human and health. And that's when I first did more human related subjects. So I didn't do anatomy until my third year of uni, and I loved it. And then I did physiology and I did neuroscience. And so when I did those kind of subjects, I had more motivation and I realized they were the ones that suited me more. I didn't know about honours or PhD at all when I was that age, and that, but I had a friend or a couple of friends who were doing their honours the year above me, and they were doing a project with getting people in and, giving them soy foods, measuring their blood, and I was really interested in that, so I did a similar project the next year. Didn't know what a PhD was, didn't have any plans to do that, and then realised that that was an extension of it. And so I guess for me, the path was just letting it happen. But I did know, even in, say, my third year or so of uni, when we had to do a bit more sort of investigations for an assignment, I looked at sexual dimorphism of the human brain. So that is back in the late 90s. My supervisor was great. She put me onto that. And that was just for a third year assignment. And so I think that's when I really realized that I liked the research aspect, delving into a subject deeper, looking at all the different sources of information. And now I really love being in it. I love science overall. I love all the different aspects of it and think that it's a great thing, but that it's also got a place together with art and the arts and the humanities and, education and politics and things like that.
Thank you, Teresa. And I should also mention Associate Professor Larkin is a superstar of STEM. So, Teresa, I can understand back in the 90s it would have been such a different STEM environment. There wouldn't have been many women, though I suppose your supervisor was female. How did that actually work then? We talk about this idea you can't see what you can't be. How what got you through that? What got you interested regardless?
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think I saw barriers. I don't think I was looking for a role model necessarily. And so I think I was just sort of on my path. And through uni, I had female and male lecturers, and I didn't see them differently. I was so lucky in that my PhD supervisors, or honours and PhD, I had a female and a male, and they were both amazing. They were hugely respectful of each other. And so I had a really good role model in Will Price, my male supervisor, as well as Lee Astheimer, my female supervisor. It wasn't until I was doing my PhD that I realized it came from that there were, say, some different expectations or pressures from people around me. So I felt insecure around some of the male researchers, for example, and I just felt like that they knew more, they were a bit more confident. So I definitely felt like I didn't, I'm not as good here. I think that was an internal thing, but it's true that it always comes from, what you see around you. And then I have to say, I didn't notice it more until also working. When you're in the environment and you look around, either in your own institution or in others, or in what's being seen, what's being said, things like that, and looking at the stats, because a part of me can still think, but surely things are more even, there's more equity these days. But when you look at the stats, it shows that it's not. It shows that there still are less women in more senior positions across STEM. And I have to say that I'm probably in the field that has the most female representation. So in the sort of more human sciences, whereas I know for my fellow superstars of STEM who are in physics and engineering and technology, they definitely still face quite a male-dominated environment, where there can be some discrimination and some sort of inequities and, in those areas.
So obviously that lends itself to this idea. It's 2024. We're probably on the cusp of having the first female president of the US. Why is this still a challenge? Where is this idea coming from that there are certain science is not for girls to begin with, but if you are a girl, there are certain sciences you are allowed to play in?
It's so true, and then it does still exist because we're talking about, a potential female president of the US. And I have to say, I know of the countries where there's been a female president because there's so few of them. There's no other reason why I'd know about Finland's ex-president who was a female. I don't know anything about Norway's or Sweden's. It's just that I know where there's been a woman. And so I think there still is this disparity, and that is that thing of, you can only be what you can see. I think that there are still ingrained prejudices. I think even yesterday, I had a colleague mention that he was talking to students about a surgeon, and he used the pronoun he. The surgeon obviously might not be a man. And that was coming from a man in his probably 50s. And so I think that there's change for the younger generations. I think that many people who are in younger generations wouldn't think twice about having a female president. I think it's the older generation, and so hopefully we're changing that. But yeah, it's a slow change, isn't it? Where there's been these paths that have been considered masculine, and that men have those skills, and we know that that's not the case. There's no differences in the brain in terms of the skills that someone can have, the knowledge they can learn, anything like that. There is no difference biologically. So it's definitely come from that stereotypes and the gendered and the social aspects. And I think that it will just take time. And the hard thing is, people say this, and I do think it's true. When there are positions that have fewer females in them, then there's a more judgment, and anything that goes wrong by that female in that role seems to be judged more harshly. Whereas there could be nine men in that role, and the problems are diluted across the nine of them. So I think that that's difficult as well, that until we get to some more equitable representation across different fields, then we'll have less harsh judgment of the minorities. And so not just females, but obviously we're talking about this in my case, that then there'll be less judgment of those specific minorities, which will mean that we can have better representation and just accept, a leader can be whoever that person is if they're the best person for the role.
Absolutely. And it reminds me of what Ruth Bader Ginsburg talks about, that when you have more representation, you're really changing the norms of that space. And it's not really a minority then, and changes the system because of that. I suppose,
yeah.
What changes do you think need to happen then for that future where this is a norm to come into being?
Making sure that we have diversity on board in enrolments and things like that, because people think that then people aren't being chosen on their merit. We absolutely still need people to be chosen on their merit, but we do need to start opening up extra opportunities because for people in minorities, because the reality is that in the past, the situation was the reverse. And so we can also argue that in the past, positions were not necessarily given on merit. They were given on opportunities. And if more, for example, men had certain opportunities because they were mentored and they were, you know, given these chances, and they were built up and they were, you know, appointed because like often appoints like, we could argue that in those situations, there was maybe not as much of a focus on merit either. So I think the argument when people worry that by opening up positions to increase diversity will take away from merit-based or take away from the skills that are needed, that's not true. I do think that we have to consider diversity and we have to consider opportunities. And there's a great line at saying, if we're not consciously including, we're probably subconsciously excluding. So I think training of people about things like that, about subconscious bias, about the importance of diversity, because we absolutely know it is so beneficial. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg made some great points, and really making people aware of that. You know, if you're not consciously including and thinking about diversity, you might be subconsciously excluding because we just go along with what we know.
So I know you also do a lot of work in schools. What changes do you think need to happen within the school environment to create this possibility that you can grow up and be a physicist or an engineer or whatever you want to be?
So I'm really hopeful that things are changing for the better in that way. You know, I do believe that younger girls and gender diverse people are seeing more representation of people like them in higher roles and in STEM professions. So I'm definitely hopeful for that. I think the one thing where there's still a lag is in the educators. So it's really difficult, I think, to get science educators anyway. You know, there's a real lack of people who are teaching in primary and high schools across different science maths fields. So it's really ensuring that we prepare teachers well in terms of the content so that all teachers, male and female, anyone from gender diverse, different backgrounds, so that they're competent and able to explain not only the sciences, but also to explain, you know, why we need to learn sciences and maths or what kind of jobs you could have when you're learning those skills. So I think that in schools now, kids are exposed to more, and I do think that they are seeing more diversity, you know, even by news readers, you know, people that they see in media. But I think training still educators and making sure that we have positive school environments for staff to stay, because I think there are some challenges there sometimes, so that then we can have, you know, staff who are, so we can have in the, you know, university graduates, we can have a mix of people so that then they're going back and teaching.
Fantastic. So my final question then, Teresa, is what would you say to young girls listening to this, especially those out in rural regional communities? What advice would you give them about pursuing a career in STEM?
So firstly, I would say that you should always follow something that you're passionate about. And, you know, when I was in school, I loved art. I loved music. I wanted to become a creative designer at one stage. You know, there were so many different things I wanted to do. I think it's totally fine when you're young to not know what you want to do. But I think the best thing is to be open to everything. And I think not to disregard that if you don't like maths as a subject at school or science as a subject at school, you know, not to think that that's all kinds of maths or all kinds of science. I think some of the best skills for going into the areas of STEM are about creativity and curiosity. And you can link that with arts, or you can link it with writing, or you can link it with, you know, other things, or history or anything. You know, there's lots of things you can link it to. Any great careers in STEM, and I know so many amazing women as well as men. And so I think knowing that there'll be a lot more support for young women as they come through. And so they will already have a lot more role models. There's lots of people who will be there to build them up. So I think not to be afraid, you know, to take the next steps, to find in, you know, topics or questions that they're interested in. And science is a great way to explore the world and to really think and to keep on learning and to keep on, you know, questioning and coming up with potential answers and then more questions. So it's a really fun area to be in.
Thank you so much for sharing that passion with us today, Teresa. I really appreciate you taking time to have a chat with us.
No worries. Thank you so much.
I'm now joined by my co-host, Dr. Donna Bridges. What were your thoughts about listening to our two speakers today?
Well, I think it's quite clear that there are barriers occurring on multiple levels. And one of those is when children are very young, they start to gender work. They start to notice that men do some jobs and women do other jobs. And in Australia, we've got a highly gendered and segregated workforce. So compared to other countries in the Western world, we have much more gender segregation at work. And children pick that up. They pick it up in social cues. And so they decide that boys are scientists, boys fly planes, boys are engineers, boys build bridges, that sort of thing. They see it in the media, they see it in their homes. So it does create a socio-cultural barrier. And in talking about that, we're not even in the workforce yet. We're still little. We're not even starting to decide what subjects we'll take in high school, what we'll do at university, or what we're going to be when we grow up.
Absolutely. And I particularly liked how there was this notion that even within STEM, there are more female disciplines like the health and caring disciplines. So there are some which are more male and blokey and masculine, like engineering, I suppose, and, you know, anything to do with automobiles and that kind of sort of disciplines or areas. And then the caring responsibilities still, which we probably learn as children, carries into how STEM is perceived, that the caring part of STEM is more female and women are allowed to work in that space.
Well, I suppose when cars were first invented, women weren't in the professional workforce. They were working, but in unskilled jobs. So these industries have built up without women being in them. So it looks like we're naturally segregating ourselves at work, but I don't think we are because, you know, there was a time where there were no women, not even in the caring parts of the STEM workforce. So I think also when girls get into high school and they start doing those subjects, it can be quite difficult to be just one or two people in a classroom, and that carries on through university as well. So it's seen that you've got to be a particular type of girl to handle that environment. And I often think then the environment needs to change. If it's an environment that's not receptive to inclusion and diversity, then they need to figure out how to get that environment a bit more receptive and not be so blokey that it's repelling anybody that isn't blokey, because we have to remember that's not just girls that are being repelled. There's all sorts of men that are repelled by that.
Definitely. And I think it is exclusionary in that way to everyone, not just to women in particular. But there is hope, and I think as we see greater representation and you know, movements like the Women in STEM that create this belief that, yes, another reality, another world is possible where STEM can be not gendered in the way that it currently is.
That's right, because if we want to consider innovation and technological advancement, then we need a diverse workforce, and that's been proven over and over again.
Thank you so much for joining me, Donna. And that's all we have for this month's episode of Conversations for a Brave New World. Join us again next month.
Thank you for listening. This show is brought to you by the Gender Network. To get involved or find out more, simply Google the Gender Network at Charles Sturt.